Before I bring on my guest, first let me give a disclaimer for this touchy topic. And let me be clear, no one is denying a Holocaust. There was a Holocaust. It happened. There were also millions of people who died outside of prison camps. Holocaust revisionism is not Holocaust denial. But not all of the post-war Soviet propaganda or Allied wartime stories are accurate. Debunking ridiculous claims is not exonerating the Nazis, nor does it mean that nothing bad happened. Taking every American claim about their enemies as the solid truth in World War II would be idiotic, just as it would be to do so today. Unfortunately, people hold cult-like ethnocentric positions about World War II. Downplaying some of the Allies' claims doesn't make somebody a Nazi or a neo-Nazi. It would be like painting a critic of President Obama as a racist, or saying somebody who's pointing out war crimes by the Northern generals in the Civil War is pro-slavery. Finding out that fewer people died in a war than originally was thought ought to be good news, but tragically, ethnic groups are taking victimhood status as a badge of honor. So instead of going on autopilot or name-calling, take the info in, and if you disagree, do so with data, reason, and counterpoints, not emotional tribalism and condemnation. Revisionists suffer greatly socially and financially for even touching this topic. There is zero gain in challenging officialdom. People who let them speak are also attacked. So please, at least listen and try to stay objective. We have revisionism in every historical event, especially wars. Numbers change, things change, and there are a lot of ridiculous claims about World War II, such as soaps, lampshades, and gas chambers, which just don't have any physical evidence. And furthermore, it's well known that props were made by the Psych War Department about the soap and lampshades, and that gas chambers were built and reconstructed at camps after the war. A lot of numbers have been exaggerated, and it's not anti-Semitic to figure this out. It's not pro-Nazi to point this out. There was a lot of horror and blame to go around in World War II. All sides killed civilians. All sides starved people to death. All sides tortured one another. What ought to come out of it, instead of this good guy versus evil narrative, is that the real problem here is government. Governments murder millions of people. You look at the worst atrocities in history, and it's not done by the people breaking the law, it's done by the people upholding the law, by the domestic police force, by the armies, by the militaries, by the people following orders. And not only the Nazis, and not just Stalin, or the colonial powers of Europe, all of them. And that's what we're trying to get at, for the sake of truth and clarity, and it's not to hurt anybody, and it's not to attack any groups. This is just looking at the evidence that we have, and it might be right, it might be wrong, there's no reason to hold on to it dogmatically or anything. And again, nobody's denying a Holocaust, but some of these figures have to be looked at, and it's outrageous that you can actually go to jail for just questioning these things. And that's why I'm allowing my guest, who made a movie about Majdanek, which was one of the camps, to come on and share his piece. And if you want to debunk it or try to, go ahead, but do so in a mature adult way and not by attacking his character. And if you agree, then you agree. But let's look at events based on the evidence and not some kind of arbitrary sports team-like mentality of, well, I identify with this group who suffered, and so I'm just going to believe everything there regardless. You just can't treat history like that. You have to remove yourself and be objective.
All right, joining me back on the program today is Eric Hunt, because he's made another film that I want to discuss, the Majdanek gas chamber myth or myths. His site is theholocausthoaxmuseum.com. You can check out all his other work there. And we're going to be talking about the latest film about Majdanek. First of all, what was that? What was that allegedly in the official story?
So Majdanek is a German concentration camp located in eastern Poland, Majdanek was the first major concentration camp liberated by the victorious Allies. Majdanek was liberated by the Soviet Union, you know, those always trustworthy truth tellers, the Soviet Union. So when they liberated Majdanek, they claimed 2 million were gassed in a factory of death, which included 7 gas chambers. But because this concentration camp, Majdanek, was captured mostly intact, a great deal of documents as well as physical evidence, including the actual buildings, have helped acquit the Germans of the gas chambers disguised as shower rooms, factory of death, wartime atrocity propaganda.
Now that is something we all heard in grade school, that there were rooms labeled as showers, and Jews were sent there and they were actually gas, and that's where they were killed, and it's been in some Hollywood films too.
Well, yeah, it's the central piece of what's called the Holocaust, is that there were these gas chambers disguised as shower rooms with fake shower heads where people were gassed in. And Majdanek is really the best place to point out how this is nonsense. So originally, they claimed that at Majdanek there were 7 homicidal gas chambers. But today, thanks to the work of many revisionists throughout the past, now the Majdanek Museum claims only 5 of these rooms ever served as homicidal gas chambers. So they backed away from claiming that 5 of these 7 rooms were used to gas people. And in fact, when you examine those rooms, you see actual planted evidence. In one of the rooms, the Soviets actually just crudely cut holes in the ceiling. And they claim this was a homicidal gas chamber for years. It's a total, it's a little complicated, but I recommend...
Well, how do we know they weren't homicidal gas chambers with gas coming out of fake shower heads? What's the evidence against that?
Well, I think the best evidence is the two remaining, quote, homicidal gas chambers that they have on display today. So, The two currently alleged homicidal gas chambers at Majdanek concentration camp are located in a facility that's labeled Bath and Disinfection 1. Now, this is a normal delousing facility at the very entrance to the camp. It's called Bath and Disinfection 1.
Well, wouldn't they just say, well, they labeled it bath, but it wasn't really a shower?
This is what the claim is, that the Nazis, used deception to trick Jews thinking they're going into showers, but they actually got gassed. But when you actually look at Bath and Disinfection 1, well, what do you have there? Well, you have a real shower room. You have a dressing room, you have a room where people had their hair cut before taking the shower. And then you have
outside where it's connected to water, or was.
Yeah, well, no one doubts that the actual shower room was operational. It could even be operational today with a few modifications. So no one actually claims that this shower room
was a fake one. Survivors who said, I went in there and it was water.
Well, this is the rub, and this is where a lot of these hoaxers are really, this is where their lies fall apart, because, you know, we're told that there were actually these rooms that looked identical to showers where people were gassed. But here at Majdanek, the rooms are separate. You've got a real operational shower room that's connected to a boiler room that actually heated the water. And you even have concrete tubs in this room that they took disinfestation baths in. But this room has windows all along one side of the wall. So no one's claimed to have been gassed in that room. They claim they were gassed in a room that actually two rooms that were originally separated from from this delousing facility. But actually, these were just used to delouse the clothing of inmates as they were coming in. More than 3 million people.
Why give people a shower who you're going to gas to death?
Yeah, of course, it's absurd. So Majdanek was the first major concentration camp, and this is where these rumors came out that people were gassed in shower rooms. They've made films for decades that showed this shower room implying some sort of homicidal intent while they avoid filming the windows. And, of course, we know at Auschwitz.
Something too. These windows don't have bars on them. They're just glass windows. It means these people know better, the ones making the film. Like, when you go there and you see, oh, wow, there are a whole bunch of windows on one side. So you just pan the camera away and go, well, we'll just ignore that and not show it. I mean, you know it can't be true. And they still put the propaganda out.
Yeah, this is what I show. They
just didn't know any better.
Yeah, this is what I show on the video. It's called The Majdanek Gas Chamber Myth. I hope listeners can check it out. Some of the most... you've got this film, Night and Fog, made by this French director. This is supposedly one of the greatest documentaries of all time. It's just nonsense propaganda, you know? He films inside this real shower room. He deliberately avoids filming the windows, so you know the viewers think people are gassed in this room. You know, then he cuts down to these rooms, two rooms away that were actually separate, and these metal doors, which are very scary looking to the average observer, but they were just used to delouse clothing. You know, there's a heater attached to one of the rooms. There's no hole in the ceiling.
Do those rooms have the staining from the gas?
Yeah, these rooms have blue, Prussian blue staining on the walls that is evidence that cyanide gas was actually used in these rooms.
And the shower rooms, do they have any staining?
No. But the rooms that today have this Prussian blue staining, only recently, until a few years ago, the Majdanek Museum has backed away from claiming that Zyklon B was used to murder inmates in this room.
I just want to be clear that, I mean, for people who've never really researched this at all or anything, that the claim has changed. First, it was saying 2 million people killed, gassed in fake shower rooms. Then, because of the physical evidence, they can't say it was in the shower room. So they go, okay, it wasn't in the shower room. It was in these other two rooms, which are in another building. That's where they got gas instead, where this blue staining is. Oh, that's all right. And I was just going to ask if the numbers ever changed from 2 million since they had seven gas chambers. Now, like, five of them are no longer gas chambers, so.
Yeah, so throughout the years, the numbers, death toll has precipitously dropped. Revisionist Carlo Mattogno and Jürgen Graf wrote a great book about this in 1998, and they estimated that 42,200 total died at Majdanek, mostly due to disease and the catastrophically poor hygiene conditions at the camp. A lot of these wartime concentration camps are put together spur of the moment. People are brought there in crowded conditions. A lot of them already have diseases before coming to the camp. It's wartime. This is World War II. The most devastating war mankind has ever seen. Many thousands of people died at this camp. However, this doesn't mean they were gassed in shower rooms, and it doesn't mean 2 million were murdered in a, quote, factory of death.
It was a wartime. Just to be clear that for people, no one is denying people died in camps. What you're saying is that the intention of the camp, while heinous, you know, labor camp's bad enough, it's slavery, wasn't to be a death camp, and it was nowhere near 2 million.
Yes, even the Americans had internment camps for Japanese Americans during World War II. Of course, they weren't fighting a war for survival on the American soil, and the body louse was a non-entity really in America at that time.
Canada had camps too for Japanese, and the U.S. had camps for Germans too.
So, let's talk about this Bath and Disinfection 1 facility. So, typhus, this is the real killer of many of these, quote, holocausted Jews. This is a deadly disease. Typhus is carried by body louse. A lot of us are familiar with head lice. Maybe we've gotten checked for it during elementary school, or we all know about head lice. In Europe at this time...
Yeah, they come from redheads, right? Just kidding.
Of course, of course. And so in Europe at this time, the body louse was the primary transmitter of this deadly typhus disease. Typhus killed more than 3 million afterwards. So this was a huge issue during World War II as well. And the Germans, as well as the Americans, and all sides in the war, the British had these delousing facilities created. Basically, you had to enter the facility, remove all of your clothing. This clothing would be put in fumigation chambers where a chemical, or either they'd use hot air, hot steam, or chemicals such as the insecticide Zyklon B to delouse your clothing, to kill these deadly disease-carrying lice on your clothing. These prisoners would then, they'd get their hair cut to remove any areas where these lice could thrive, also to just generally clean them up. There's bacteria and dirt and a lot of filth as these people, these refugees and prisoners are entering these camps. Then they'd take a hot shower. Had to be specifically a quite hot, almost scalding hot shower. This is in order to remove the body lice and to kill the body lice that carries this deadly disease, typhus. At Majdanek, which is really sort of interesting, is that they have these concrete tubs. They'd also make the prisoners dunk in these disinfestation tubs with some chemicals, some pretty nasty chemicals, to get this off of the prisoner's skin, to kill the nits, the eggs of these lice, and to make sure they're entering this camp totally clean of these. You know, you can't. A common German sanitary slogan at the time was "one lice, your death." So the goal of these facilities was to make sure none of this deadly typhus-carrying lice could spread inside the camp proper. Typhus epidemics were killing tens of thousands throughout both Europe and the concentration camp system. So, then the prisoners would put on clean, lice-free clothing and then enter the camp. That's all this Bath and Disinfection 1 facility actually was. But today we're shown and we're claimed that people were gassed here.
What has the number of deaths been reduced to by the facility itself?
Majdanek claims that 78,000, including both Poles and Jews, possibly also Soviet prisoners of war, were killed here. However, revisionists believe this is also an exaggeration.
Killed there or died there?
Yeah, that's pretty. Well, that's what's funny is that the Majdanek Museum had a sign, I believe about 10 years ago, that claimed 300,000 died at Majdanek. Once they decided to revise this completely propaganda death toll, they changed the sign to read that they were killed there, 78,000 killed. It's not bad enough that the people died there, and it's of course embarrassing that they've had to revise these numbers so much over the years.
From 2 million to 300,000 to 78,000, yeah, it's a good 200% down.
Well, yeah, and the even that 78,000, it's also a propaganda figure, and a lot of it's connected to these phony homicidal gas chambers that they're still trying to sell to gullible tourists that walk through this delousing facility. They're looking at the showers like, they're not really questioning any of this stuff that they're being told.
When they just walk in and see the windows and say, wouldn't somebody break that? Or,
I did hear some questions asked to a tour guide while I was inside. I heard that the gas came out of the shower heads, and was this originally part of the building? So one person in the tour was actually asking some decent questions. Most people just think they're in some sort of holy shrine, it's an absurd absurd blood libel against the German people is what it is. This is a facility that was used to keep these prisoners alive, and we're told that it was used to gas babies and, you know, all these innocent people. It's absolute nonsense.
And well, to be clear too, these prisoners aren't like POWs. They were just made prisoners because of their ethnicity.
But, well, there were POWs. There was also there was a Soviet POW camp here. But as far as the Jewish inmates, there was partisan activity in this is called the General Government District of Poland. Partisans were blowing up trains, basically really impeding the German war effort. So they took it as a means for their survival to imprison this segment of the community, which was involved with aiding communism and partisans, and even directly involved with partisan activity, which included assassinating Germans and destroying their infrastructure. So
well, that's how the first camp started, with Dachau, was German dissidents thrown in prison. Makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. But in the east there was a huge partisan movement that was basically disrupting the German war effort. They viewed it just like the Americans at the time. You can say whatever you want, but this is how people fought wars back then. They put the people that they were fighting or had possible enemy sympathies into concentration camps where they wouldn't be able to be involved directly into partisan warfare or aiding the enemy.
All right.
So another thing about this Baffin disinfection facility, it's actually disinfestation, but they've got these canisters that they claim were carbon monoxide that are used to gas Jews. But when you actually look at these canisters, well, it says that they're CO2 canisters, which is carbon dioxide. And there are many industrial uses for carbon dioxide. The apparent supposed carbon monoxide canisters that the Soviets claimed they discovered disappeared and never showed up as evidence in any of the post-war trials. So what we have on display for tourists are CO2 canisters, just like the kind you can see in any restaurant, that are used for carbonated beverages.
Well, what's the point of having carbon monoxide if you already have the cyanide?
Exactly. Not only that, the U.S.
Other than, there are no blue stains, so we have to change gases.
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime you look at it, see their holes in their story, it becomes really quite evident. And actually, holes are play into this story directly. In one of the rooms, which was a clothing delousing room, obviously it has blue stainings on the walls. It has a heater connected to the room. Zyklon B was actually designed to be relatively slow acting so that the people that were spreading this insecticide down in the room, they could get out of the room before it actually released the gas. And usually you had to speed up the release of this gas, you had to heat it. So in one of these rooms, you have a heater connected to it, and you've got these blue staining all of the rooms. However, there's no hole in the ceiling. There's no way to actually introduce this Zyklon B in a theoretical case where this room was filled with people. There's no hole in the ceiling. We're told that they dropped it. These, you know, the Germans, these brilliant engineers who eventually put a man on the
floor. They just threw it in there and shut the door real fast.
Yeah, that's actually what the museum tried to claim for many years, is that the Nazis just sort of threw it over the heads of those inside like confetti and slammed the door. But they backed away from this claim in that particular room, and they claimed that carbon monoxide was used in that room. But, you know,
although carbon monoxide doesn't leave blue stains.
and there is no carbon monoxide that they have on display there, that any physical evidence existing of the carbon monoxide, these, you know, this proof of mass murder of 2 million people, these alleged carbon monoxide canisters, they just miraculously disappeared, you know.
They have all the Zyklon B canisters.
Yeah, but of course
that's because for the clothing. So it's like, well, yeah, the room isn't outfitted for Zyklon B since there aren't any holes. There's blue stains all over the walls. We're just going to ignore that and say it was carbon monoxide.
Well, it was outfitted for delousing clothing. What people would do, and I show this in the video of an American Coast Guard crew, is that they would just, there, you'd get a work crew in there with gas masks on, with the clothing would be put in there, usually on racks or hangers. And the work crew would come in and spread Zyklon B around on the floor. And, you know, they'd have gas masks on. They'd leave the room, shut the room, mark the room off to make sure no one would enter accidentally. And they'd turn the heater on. And that's all that happened in that room. No, even the museum claims no one was gassed with cyanide in that room today. The Majdanek Museum is continuing to revise their original propaganda lies.
Can they just not let it go because it cast doubt on all the other camps?
Yeah, pretty much.
Is it possible that there were gassings in other camps and this one they just hopped on the bandwagon and exaggerated and then kind of got caught? And
well, they're in a real fix here now. They started out with 7 gas chambers. When you actually examine those 5 that they dropped, you see actually evidence that actual tampering with the actual rooms, planted evidence, destroying the rooms, modifying the rooms to make them look like they were used to kill people. But these rooms today are, the Majdanek Museum has disowned them. They claim they were never used to gas anyone. But in particular, there are 2 rooms that have these crudely chipped holes in the ceilings of these rooms, because as we said, that's the way that they claim that the people were gassed, that the Nazis dropped Zyklon B over the heads of the prisoners through holes in the ceiling. But these holes in the ceiling are so crudely formed, it's pretty obvious they were made post-liberation very quickly with people who didn't even have proper tools. The rebar is still visible and uncut through these holes. In 2 of these rooms, which have these crudely formed holes, well, now today, the Majdanek Museum claims they were never used to gas anyone. Well, what do they have these stupid holes in the ceiling for? They don't really like to answer those hard questions that revisionists come up with, but it's quite obvious they were post-war Soviet propaganda fakes.
Well, it's like the chimney at Auschwitz that's not attached to anything.
Exactly. You know, the Soviets were directly involved with modifying buildings post-war to frame the Germans, such as the crematorium you mentioned at Auschwitz, which has a chimney that just floats out of the ground. It's not connected to the building or anything even below it. And of course, that's another one of these crematories that they claim that they gassed people in. Well, in the crematory at Majdanek, there's one room that they tried to sell as a gas chamber for only until about 7 years ago. This is one has one of these crudely formed holes in the ceiling, but right below this hole is a floor drain. So if this room was ever used, the Zyklon B would just be dropped right into the floor drain and fall down and possibly into the water system. Who knows? But they really have swept that room under the rug. They really darken it today, and most people just pass right by it. As far as the crematory, they tried to claim that 2 million were gassed and that this was a factory of death. And they kept showing these ovens. People are really brainwashed by seeing these crematory ovens. And they think that this is proof of an extermination program. But like I said, the high inmate death toll, primarily due to disease, diseases such as dysentery, typhus, and other illnesses are the primary cause of the death toll at this camp. And just like the Ebola epidemic, you have to cremate these diseased corpses or the epidemic can spread to the entire camp. And at Majdanek and other camps, even the German guards were falling, were being killed due to this typhus epidemic. So the amount of ovens at Majdanek, when you actually look at it, is not enough to dispose of what the amount they claimed. Originally, they claimed 2,000 people were cremated a day in 5 crematory ovens. All this is just impossible.
Jeez.
And, you know, they had the best scientific minds of Poland and the Soviet Union writing this report claiming that 2,000 were cremated a day in 5 ovens. You know, if you do the math, if you claim that maybe under best circumstances, it takes a little over 1 hour to cremate a corpse. Of course, the bones are still left over. Basically at Majdanek, they could probably cremate less than 100 prisoners a day, nowhere near the 2,000 a day that was originally claimed. The story just falls apart when you actually look at it. It's really the Achilles heel of the larger Holocaust hoax, really.
Well, they're claiming now that, well, not they, but there are a couple guys in the New York Times has given them a platform saying that it was more than 6 million. It was like 20 million. And there were camps everywhere in Germany. That's the new thing. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but.
Well, I saw this new documentary. I don't know if you saw it, but it's about Sarah Palin, and she goes to the center of the earth, and the first thing she sees is Hitler riding a Tyrannosaurus Rex. I don't know if you saw this preview for this new documentary.
But Sarah Palin probably doesn't believe in dinosaurs.
Yeah.
That's the saddest thing.
Yeah.
Maybe not even the center of the earth. Who knows?
Yeah.
She can see Russia from her window.
Yeah. But of course, the 6 million number is nonsense. This is a number that was pushed by the Zionists decades before World War II. There's no proof whatsoever that 6 million Jews were killed by the Germans during World War II. Revisionists
have. That's good
news.
It's to me that the lower the number, the better. It's I'm happy to find out fewer people died than I thought. But there are a lot of people who it's the reversal. The more, the better. Like being a victim is the best thing ever.
Well, and Israel has a population.
They want people to have died. It's just really kind of backwards, right?
Yeah, it's a death cult. A lot of religions are death cults. Israel has a population of 6 million today. That's a good place to start looking for these alleged missing. But of course, every, quote, Holocaust survivor is proof that the Germans never intended to murder all of them.
I thought of even when I was 8 years old, like, why put them on a train and ship them to a camp if you're going to kill them? You could just kill them in the town you picked them up in.
Exactly.
It costs a lot less than a train and all that, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different arguments to be made. Friedrich Paul Berg pointed out that the Germans actually had railroad delousing facilities where you could put entire train loads into this covered facility, and they would be gassed. The trains would be gassed to basically be clean of these deadly lice and bugs and things like this. So they could have never let them out of these trains, put them in these special railroad gassing facilities. Instead, what did the Germans do? They fed them, they clothed them, they, you know, kept them alive.
Yeah, like, why do the camps have beds and kitchens and stuff? Like, what's the purpose? If it's not for labor, like, it's got to be for labor. Why feed them at all? Like,
it's not only for labor. As I point out in the video, there's toddlers that were kept alive at Majdanek. These were, at least when I was in school, I was learning that, you know, children below 13 or 12 were immediately gassed. If they're useless for labor, they were thrown in a gas chamber immediately. That's what I was told. But, you know, there's at Majdanek, you have basically bunk cribs on display to this day. I show in my video one toddler who went through Majdanek and she's, quote, survived. At this place, they had hospitals. Of course, the hospitals were... But it was the war. They had their resources were dedicated towards winning the war in the East, not really providing the best medical attention to who they perceived as their enemies. So I mean, it's
what
nice
kind of labor were they doing then at Majdanek?
Well, I point out in one of the videos. I mean. In a segment of the video, at Majdanek, what they have on display are tens of thousands of pairs of shoes. And the average gullible tourist just walks through and they're told that these are the shoes of gassed victims. And they're just, you know, it's like they're in church or a cemetery. They're walking through there as if it's a holy place looking at all these shoes. But actually across from this display of shoes is a giant building. It's called the Shoemaker's Workshop. So one of the things they did at Majdanek, it was called the SS, Fur and Clothing Works of Lublin. This would be a place where a lot of the clothing and shoes and things would be brought from all around, the camp system, as well as the East, and as well as occupied Poland, and the clothing and shoes would be repaired or redistributed to aid the German war economy. These shoes are not proof that the former owners were gassed. For one, we know that prisoners were given inexpensive replacement shoes that were made of cheaper quality materials than the in-demand leather and things that these shoes had. But we also have testimony of some people who worked in these shoemaking and shoe repair operation. One of the persons in the video, he talks that he had to walk around in the newly created shoes to break them in for the soldiers on the Eastern Front. A lot of the work that they did in the Lublin district had to do with textiles and clothing, manufacturing uniforms and repairing shoes and clothing. But like I said, some people in this camp didn't have to work. A lot of the younger, the children and the women didn't work at all.
And they weren't murdered.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there wouldn't be any cribs.
No baby cribs, no toddler survivors of this, quote, death camp.
Interesting. And so all that's up on what, YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. Thankfully, this one's still up.
that's why I asked. Like, I've seen it already. I was just wondering if it was still on YouTube is what I should have said.
Yeah, I don't know if some of your viewers have seen my other shows. The Treblinka Archaeology Hoax was my last video. That one's been messed with on YouTube. You know, the typical censorship of these liars and con artists that don't really want anyone to see the other side. They censor our videos. They restrict them from entire countries or just take them off completely.
Let me ask you something else. Do you have like a donation button or something? Because I know you've been making films sort of camp by camp, and I know it's on your own dime. Do you have like a place where people can?
Yeah, I could really use some help. I hope to do some more research and travel and films next year. I put out three videos this year. I visited three major sites in Poland, and I hope if people appreciate my work and want to see more, they can donate at my website. It's HolocaustHoaxMuseum.com. I'd really appreciate if you appreciate my films. I've put out, maybe you've heard of some of my films, The Last Days of the Big Lie, and this year, The Treblinka Archaeology Hoax, as well as The Majdanek Gas Chamber Myth.
Last Days of the Big Lie should rename to Shit Diamonds.
Yeah, I think so. If you've ever heard about this woman, Irene Zisblatt, who claims she repeatedly defecated and swallowed diamonds for a year and a half while in Auschwitz and on death marches, and she had her skin selected to become a lampshade. She escaped from inside a gas chamber and was thrown over an electrified barbed wire fence onto a train. She had her tattoo removed by Dr. Mengele. She had the color of her eyes changed. Let me think, what other outrageous lies has this woman told to gullible people? And, you know, she's just an absolute nut. But if you've heard of her, it's probably thanks to my video, The Last Days of the Big Lie.
Well, she was in a Spielberg film, right?
Yeah, it was called The Last Days. It won the 1999 Academy Award.
See, this is what bothers me is, like, of all the, I don't know how many thousands, tens of thousands of, you know, archived material and people he could have interviewed, how did he get someone like her and some of the other, the five or so he chose were all so ridiculous?
Well, yeah, they choose the people that they know that'll play ball, that they can direct, that will tell a lie, that they don't even really have to coach that much, I guess. As I point out in that film, if you look through it's called the Survivors of the Shoah Visual History Foundation, Spielberg collected testimonies of, quote testimonies of 52,000, quote, survivors. Well, first of all, this amount of survivors should be ringing a bell in skeptical people's heads, and this is only a fraction of the actual, quote, survivors. But when you actually look at this archive, at some of these videos, well, it definitely doesn't support this official story. You have these liars like Irene Zisblatt who are brought to the forefront, but you also have these people that are telling the truth about what happened in these camps that you've never heard anything like this in your public school or on your television. Some of the people in that video I show, they talk about theatrical performances at Auschwitz with grand pianos on a theater stage. Some of the, quote, work they did was just transcribing music for some of these performances. They had a daycare, basically, for children there, where they were given paints and, quote, anything they wanted. They would make arts and crafts.
They painted a mural of Snow White.
Yeah, this woman painted a mural of Snow White in the children's barracks. They put on a costumed theatrical performance on the stage there. You know, cool.
There's a soccer team. See, that's what did it for me is seeing that, because the only thing that ever held on to the Holocaust for me is that there were survivors who came out and said, yeah, they killed people, there was gasings and so on. And I'm like, we can't even call them all liars, but it's not all liars. They're basically just a handpicked filter group for certain Hollywood films, and yet the majority of the people who actually survived are saying, no, I never saw a gas chamber, I never saw super lampshades. We actually had a pool and a daycare center and so on and so on. And that's why we survived. And we went to work, and none of the stuff we heard in grade school is reported by these survivors. But what they do through this filter is act like the ones who were alleging lied are representing everybody, and no one else said otherwise, because we don't have access to any until the internet, really. We don't have access to any of the other accounts. It was only what Spielberg and company want you to hear. And so they find these, you know, people who, you know, escaped nine different camps and or whatever, you know, that kind of stuff. And to me, it's almost like those lies are so over the top that it's even more damaging.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think so. That's why I think that video in particular is pretty powerful. I mean, I did what I could as far as production values are not the greatest, but I mostly just show them talking, spreading their lies. If you know anything about body language, when people are telling lies, you can tell these people their body language, they're touching their face, and some of them are just telling absurd tales, so you know they're lying. It's really, well, I mean, so
my
this
tattoo
one
was removed. I wonder if she was even there.
Well, people, not everyone that went to Auschwitz were tattooed is the thing.
Again, in the time it takes to give somebody a tattoo, you could just cut their wrist or whatever. Like, the death camp story doesn't make any sense. It's just,
no.
Labor is bad enough, and that so many tens of thousands of people died from starvation and typhus is bad enough. Like, it's a horrible thing, but I don't see the point in exaggerating it into this 6 million plus figure and gassing and all that. It just sounds ridiculous. The only thing I can think of is, they gotta have something that's worse than what the Allies did, otherwise it's not good versus evil.
Well, not only that, they wouldn't have had all this, all these reasons to create the State of Israel on stolen land. That's a huge the Zionist movement. That's
it's not the first time Europeans have gone somewhere with religious claims and taken land from people.
Yeah, I mean, I'd question whether these people are Europeans, but sure.
I mean, Jews from Europe, whatever, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, this at this time, I mean, colonialism was contracting, it was ending throughout the world, and this is Israel is the most recent colonial state, you could say, and it really doesn't have any huge reason to exist when you point out that 6 million in gas chambers are not true, and then you look at what they're doing to the Palestinians. Well, it's pretty monstrous.
Also, the Allies did win the war, so there's no reason for them to leave and go anywhere. You won.
Yeah. I mean, of course, today, it's a different situation today for sure. And of course, you know, people ask, where did they go? Well, where did the quote Holocaust survivors go? A lot of them went to America. A lot of them went to Israel, of course. They went to many countries. Wherever you find Holocaust survivors, well, this is where these quote victims went as well. You know, we've got this camp where they claim 2 million were gassed, but those 2 million didn't even exist, is what people need to realize. Like, 42,000 died at this place. Nowhere near 2 million even went through this camp. So we're dealing with hugely exaggerated numbers that aren't even real people.
Which means we actually killed more Germans than Jews in World War II in the death camps for the Germans.
Not only that, I mean, these civilian centers where people thought they were safe, such as Dresden, which was a beautiful city of the arts and had no military purpose. It was just firebombed. And what I show in my video, the Majdanek gas chamber myth, I show that these propaganda artists, in one of their videos about Majdanek, they've got an organization called the March of the Living, where they take young Jews from throughout the world and they bring them to these camps and they brainwash them. And in this video that they made, they use an actual photograph of firebombed German victims of the Allied firebombing of Dresden, and they claim these are Jewish victims of genocide. So when you see that, wait a minute, this is a picture of German civilians, well, is that genocide, what was done to them? And of course,
that's actual Holocaust, death by fire.
Exactly. You know, as they were in their bomb shelters or their homes, a lot of them actually did die of carbon monoxide poisoning from the smoke, and some were burned alive. But there's no museum for these innocent people, women and children, who thought they were safe in their
There's a homes. Great book, before I forget, and it's about the bombing of Hamburg, which is just as nasty as Dresden, in my opinion. It's called Hellstorm, The Death of Nazi Germany, and one of the few actually written about that event. And it's really, really disturbing, you know, the mass rape and everything else, and the burning, and there's pictures of all the dead German women, and all of them have their pants torn and blood stains on their underwear, and it where they've been raped before they were killed, and just, it's horrific to read. And it, I never read, got to see any of those stories in school about any victims, Germans, Russian, French, anything. It was just all the Holocaust, 6 million gassing, and how America went and saved everybody. And we really didn't get in the Pacific theater at all, other than the atomic bombings. They just ignored the McCollum memos and everything. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in revisionism and just basic history of World War II to break this story about the event, because it's always looked at as the good war, and it's used to justify every war after it. That's why it's important to me to get to the truth of the matter. I don't care who killed who. I just want to let the truth be known. But that what people need to realize is the government slaughter people. They don't give a damn about you. It's the poor who get killed. And there was nothing good about World War II. It's just a bunch of governments slaughtering each other's peons. And, you know, the only kind of accidental good result is a lot of the colonial empires collapsed because they no longer had the strength to hold the yoke over them. But then they just switched to neocolonialism anyway. So, yeah, I mean, history is just so, it's so, like, tribalistic. I mean, America, hell yeah. I mean, that's how it's taught.
I mean, it's very scary. I mean, you know, if we had the same mentality we did during World War II, well, we'd be at war with Russia right now, because we had peace treaties supposedly to defend Ukraine. When you look at how World War II started, it started very similar to what's going on now. The Germans wanted to basically annex an area of ethnic Germans to Greater Germany that actually was part of Germany before the Treaty of Versailles cut property away from Germany. Was that worth going? Was that worth 60 million dead over this area in East Germany with ethnic Germans? You know, is this area in East Ukraine worth World War III? I don't think so. There's other ways to resolve.
Russia would be in Germany's shoes this time, because they're annexing property that used to belong to Russia with Russian speakers and ethnic Russians who live in Crimea and Eastern Ukraine.
Well, but this is how World War II started. The Germans also had ethnic Germans that they were concerned about their well-being. There were supposedly Polish attacks on these Germans living in this area and things. So could it have been resolved through diplomacy? Did the Germans really want to take over the world? It's funny hearing that line from the British, who actually did take over the world and control the entire world at one point, that the Germans wanted to take over the entire world. I mean, do the Russians want to take over the world? Well, you're hearing some of this propaganda now, I guess. I don't think so. I think, you know, there's these divisions between different ethnicities and things that can be resolved through other means other than 60 million dead.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, as a consequence, the Cold War after that, and you can kind of tag on, the number gets higher and higher if you want to see like all the consequences in total because of the war, and how that ended up down in the long run and dividing the Koreas and everything. There wouldn't have been a war in Korea either if there hadn't been a World War II.
So today, this myth has a huge effect on the entire world. You know, Europeans, it's illegal in many parts of Europe to even talk about this, to show skepticism regarding this. And this is, you know, I grew up reading George Orwell, you know, and when I see things like this, thought crime, actually in my lifetime becoming a reality, thought crime, it's proof that this story doesn't hold up, first of all. This is the only thing in the world you can't talk about. Well, when you actually look at it, the story falls apart when you look at these gas chamber shower room things. It's just nonsense, really, when you look at it. But it's such a powerful weapon that they use for thought control. And, of course, Zionists use it today.
Well, you get a lot of flack for doing what you do. I saw a hit piece from the Southern Poverty Law Center about myself and you. They said I said that Jews were prone to rape and pedophilia. This is fucking ridiculous. I've never said anything like that. I'm not anti-Semitic at all. I just look at the evidence and say, look, I don't think as many people died as what was claimed. And I didn't always believe that. I mean, I believed in the war propaganda when I was a little kid. I questioned it, but I just thought, well, if all these other adults have looked at it already, it must be some missing information or something. And as I got older and looked at it more and more, I was right to question it as a kid. I mean, it just never made sense. And that you see that this is the myth that allows all the wars afterward. And that's my motivation. Like, I'm not trying to ruin someone's pissing contest on who is the greatest victim or anything. I'm just trying to say that, look, it's important to show the true horror of World War II, that there isn't always just like a clear-cut boogeyman that we go after, that wars are actually started for profit and resources and so on, and they don't really care about liberating people. Like, we've seen these myths of liberating women in Afghanistan or liberating Kurds in Iraq or liberating whatever, and they're just lies. It's resource wars every time.
Well, I mean, it's a new religion, Holocaustianity. I was talking to you earlier about this new Exodus film. You know, much like the Exodus story, the Holocaust story is this huge new chapter in this Jewish Bible, you can say. But like the Exodus story, it doesn't hold up when you actually examine it.
You mean they didn't walk right through the Red Sea?
Yeah, I mean, Jews aren't magical people.
There was no parting of the sea that really didn't happen, the magic powers. Dang, I thought that was real.
Jews don't have magical powers. I don't know how
Moses
to get through to people. They didn't miraculously survive anything. They were kept alive by the Germans who kept them. They just fed and clothed them. And in many ways...
Well, let me just tell you with the Exodus story. Cyrus the Great freed the Hebrew slaves. He freed all the slaves in the entire Babylonian Empire, which included that Sinai part of Egypt at the time. And what's funny is the Bible in the book of Hebrews acknowledges that, but in the book of Exodus it says, no, it was Moses leading them right through the sea and parted and all that total nonsense stuff. But within its own books, because it's a canon of 66 books, even in the Old Testament, they contradict themselves. But in history, Cyrus the Great, he's the great emancipator. You know, I mean, he did a lot of great things. And it's just funny how biblical history, Torah history, whatever, has, in some people's minds, has taken over. And they think it's real history. They think Solomon built a temple with a magic ring. And, like, come on.
They think Noah's Ark actually happened.
Yeah, absolutely. They believe in the talking serpent and talking donkeys and all of it, like it actually happened. And they go, oh, well, maybe these are metaphors. Like, no, dude, that's just pure mythology.
Yeah, it's Athena, I think, or something. I think in the past 70 years, religion has, of course, changed, and they're trying to back away from these myths where they originally were believed to be totally literal. The Noah's Ark story, it was believed to be totally literal 100 years or so ago. You can even say the people that fought World War II believed in these things, that they were literal. You know, today, a lot of the more educated people that still believe in them, they try to back away from it and claim they were metaphors or some other nonsense, when they should be really embarrassed to believe in any of these myths at all.
Yeah, but if you admit it's just a creation story, then you don't have the 6,000-year claim to the land.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's hard. Sorry.
Oh, I'm just saying, like, when they wrote the junk, they just said, you know, X number of years ago is when this story happened. Well, that doesn't make it so, since it never happened. It doesn't. Your date on it is a lie also.
It's really difficult to come to terms with being lied to all your life. I mean, especially if you're a religious person. Like you said before, when you're a child, you trust adults that you think they're older, they're wiser, they have so much more knowledge than you, they're so experienced, they know what's right. They're telling you a bunch of lies and myths. I mean, you know, it's almost Christmas. We were told about Santa Claus too when we were younger. You can't point out that the new conservative movement is primarily composed of Jewish Zionists. You basically can't criticize them at all. So,
But I have.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to have a very prosperous life if you're going to do that. You can be, if you live in Europe, you could face years in prison.
But what I think there is, it's in America's interest to keep the Holocaust myth up as much as anyone's, because they need the war industry. And it's also the most effective way to go about that is to have the Jewish neocons at the forefront, because they're safe from criticism. Whereas if any other type of group were to do it, the book would be thrown at them. But criticizing the neocons is a lot harder, because they're going to get support from the Israeli state. They're going to get that natural race card, Holocaust card, minority card, you know, whereas a lot of the other boys in the military-industrial complex are absolutely hated. Like, people hate white bankers and white anybody, but if you make it part of a minority group, then the liberals will look on the other way, and, you know, this is how it goes. America's obsessed with race and obsessed with racism and scared to death of that. It's worse than being a rapist. You know, it's just part of the culture. And it's just from being inundated in school with all they really talk about is the Holocaust and slavery. And so it's all, you know, kind of racial issues. And blaming whites collectively instead of blaming governments is ridiculous to me. It's like, what? It wasn't the whites killing these people. I mean, Polish people are white and they got murdered as much as anyone, and Ukrainians are white and they got murdered as much as anybody, and Irish are white in World War One, they got murdered, and, you know, it's just or Russians or whatever, you know, it's it ain't the whites, it was governments. And same thing with the colonization of American Indians. It was the English and French and the Spanish governments. It wasn't a race, it was a policy and a military, and the majority of people had nothing to do with it.
Oh, it's a lot of brainwashing, and it's a lot of propaganda, and we've got this 70-year-old propaganda that unfortunately people still believe because of the power of the Jewish media and the government public schools. And these propaganda lies justify wars before they happen, while they happen, after they happen. And it's the duty of people who know this truth to expose it and talk about it, no matter what the ADL or whatever of these hate organizations want to ruin our lives over it. We can't let another world war happen. We're in a scary place now, and a lot of these things. Hey, are the Germans today these? Are they really these things that we see in these Hollywood films? I mean, did they just turn into monsters overnight? You know, there's propaganda.
Well, that's the thing. Each war is to stop a new Hitler. And you can't really look at the war and see that the entire thing, well, one, there shouldn't have been a First World War, but even after that, it still could have been avoided. But they had no interest in that.
It's like the Bible. You got black and white. You've got Satan taking the form of Hitler. He's Satan. You know, you always see...
it's exactly like the Bible, because Satan is the evil Germans, and yet if you add up the death tally, God kills a lot more people than Satan does.
So unfortunately, whatever you want to, I mean, and
he flooded the entire earth, he wiped out whole cities, that was all God's doing.
Well, when I was starting to question this Holocaust story, I was still questioning religion. I always doubted it, but you know, I was in a society where you had to do this. You had to go to Sunday school every week. You had to believe this, really, or there would be consequences. All right. So things are really black and white. But when you want to really understand humanity, things aren't so black and white. And I can't say I'm a big fan of Hitler. I'm not really a fan of dressing up in a military uniform and all this stuff. I think I think you have to understand everyone's motive if you're going to take your people to war and things like this. If you look at Hitler, he fought in World War One, and actually he was gassed. He suffered a poison gas attack, and he wasn't Satan. He thought he wanted what was best for his people. If you play video games or you watch a Hollywood movie, if you watch Lord of the Rings, you're going to see the good guys versus the bad guys. You know, in a lot of these wars, you just have people with different interests. They want different things. Some of them are viewed as heroes by some people. But we're not really told about this gray area that really would prevent wars and stop this biblical black and white, good and evil narrative that incites people to murder each other.
Yeah. And I think it is deeply tied to religious philosophy of that kind of dogmatic us and them.
It totally is. It absolutely is 100% good and evil. There were a lot of people that, you know, after the Weimar Republic, when people were filling wheelbarrows up full of German worthless marks, using them to heat their homes, there were communists in the street trying to take over Germany in the same way they took over Russia. Some people viewed what the National Socialists did as heroes at the beginning. Of course, they really took a turn for the worse as far as the war and things like this. But we're heading towards shaky times, scary times. You know,
Hitler fired his chief economist after he turned it around the first 5 years, and that was a big mistake. But yeah, what's sad is that a lot of the economic things that they implemented in Germany that worked could be studied today and used today, but because of how bad it turned out later, unrelated with the military and everything, those things that kind of Austrian school of thought and all has been abandoned because, that's, Nazis did that. And we're like, well, kind of that part of it worked, you know? Why don't we keep the good stuff, get rid of the bad stuff, like keep the economic philosophy and not go to war with anybody, you know?
Well, Hitler was a vegetarian, so
What was wrong with him then.
I think so. But actually,
it's weird to me that he's such a hardcore racist and he's allied with the Japanese and Italians. Like, I don't think he was really... I think there was definitely racial propaganda that he said, but I think he was really more motivated into regaining German lands and defeating the communists and the...
He was a soldier who fought in World War One. He saw his nation defeated and destroyed via the Treaty of Versailles, which took territory away and basically made the Germans slaves to the entire world. He wanted to turn it around. He did for a short period there, but as a soldier, as a military-minded person from another era, maybe it's a little bit harder for us to understand. He certainly went too far militarily, and that was all the excuse that the powers that were aligned against him, such as the Jewish banking interests and things, needed to declare war on him and what was actually a rather successful model state economically for people of the future, actually. There are many aspects of that society that America did emulate. We've got the Eisenhower interstate system, which was a direct ripoff of the Autobahn and the brilliant German roadway system. I know your listeners may not know a lot about this topic, or they might be scared of Nazis.
I'm saying, like, fuck Hitler in my mind. I don't like him at all, but every idea that came out of Germany during that time period, some of the economic things they did, the infrastructure they built, are worth studying and saying, hey, this part works and is not so bad. You know, there are things that are, just for efficiency's sake, that are being rejected outright just because they're associated to, you know, losing sight of a war. But there are things to learn from Japan too and Germany that were working workable systems. And
if you don't like the Federal Reserve, you should be studying what the Germans did during this period. Mm-hmm. And that's a model we should be looking to emulate closer in the future than anything in this Federal Reserve funny money nonsense. For sure.
Iceland's another model. It's a country, no standing army, you know, got mm-hmm. off the debt circle and so on. So I get ideas from anywhere. And you don't have to accept all the rhetoric. Obviously, hardened racism is ridiculous and invading your neighbors is ridiculous. But then, of course, if you believe that ardent racism and invading your neighbors is ridiculous, then you shouldn't support Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's exactly what they're doing, ethnically cleansing the native people that you think sure. would have stopped a long, long time ago. But, well, you just got a new set of Indians and settlers again. Really sad, but I'm glad you're making your films. And I do, again, encourage everybody to go through PayPal or whatever and donate to you what you can so you can keep making better production value and better films and more films. Really, production value is all we need. Argument to argument, content-wise, the Holocaust industry is dead.
Yeah, they're afraid to debate us. They can't debate us. They will lose. Revisionists throughout the years have exposed this phony gas chambers disguised as shower rooms. Lies. They're on their last legs. We just sort of need better production values in our videos to really get through to the younger generation, the brainwashed generations. We think videos are the best way to get through to people. A lot of people are really afraid of the topic and they're brainwashed. They've been told this their whole lives. They've watched the History Channel that is supposed to be teaching them history, but it's really fake history.
It's such a joke. My brother was on the History Channel and it was such a sham how they cut it up, and that's in another video. Real quick, what did you think of War by Deception from what you saw?
Well, I think it was great. I think everyone should watch your video. Once you know, it just, I learned a lot. I don't know a lot about every little subject there is, but it's a great, great introduction for anyone into all of the knowledge that you know, and you know a lot, and I'm impressed by it, and I recommend everyone check it out.
It kind of pops the bubble on that sort of taboo on conspiracy, I think.
You know, I haven't watched all of it. I really can't say I even know the content of all of it, but what I've seen so far is really well done, and I saw the part about Iran-Contra, and people need, of course, viewers to your show are more open-minded, but conspiracies do happen. And of course, you know, particularly with the Holocaust hoax, you could say, it's really a propaganda coup. People knock us. They call us conspiracy theorists. They say, oh yeah, what did some, you know, rabbis get into a room and decide to create this story? Well, no. You can actually break down
just
what happened.
Just post-war propaganda. It's from the psych war department, OSS.
Well, yeah, you can break down how it developed. It wasn't necessarily a conspiracy. It's just how it naturally developed. You have pre-war propaganda from subjects such as the World Jewish Congress. You have Polish underground propaganda telling about gas chambers so that other countries will come in and save them.
You had post-war propaganda to help denazify the remaining, you know, the German public. And that's where they brought them in there and showed them the soap and lampshades and all, which if nobody agrees with anymore. I mean, even the non-revisionist researchers admit, okay, there wasn't any soap actually, and there weren't any lampshades, but they did have those propped up in Buchenwald and other camps to show the whole city of Weimar was brought in to see them. And, you know, it was post-war propaganda. And because this is prior to the internet, prior to even widespread television, that it just remained, people just assumed it was true.
Well, it was prior to a lot of people being educated. people in the 40s, especially the people, the poor people, like you said, that were sent to fight this war, they believed in Noah's Ark. Why not believe in gas chambers disguised as shower rooms? You know, this is what the big powers that be tell them. Why should they question it? And like you said, the internet didn't exist, so they just believe whatever the authority figures tell them.
Look at North Korea today. If you want to see a conspiracy, look at the propaganda they give their population, you know.
Well, it's funny you say that.
It's totally doable. You can lie to millions of people. If you control the media, that's all you need.
For sure. And we see that all the time. And there's just different aspects to that. We see what's happened recently. Anyone in this, quote, truth movement who doesn't question these gas chambers disguised as shower rooms, they need to take some time and look what these revisionists who have spent time in jail because of their opinions have to say. You've got chemists such as Germar Rudolph, who spent 2 years in prison for his report, his scientific report. You've got authors, people who wrote books that were put in prison for a year and a half. You've got people who just speak out about it.
Who've lost their job or whatever because of it. Yeah.
Well, everyone who's involved with this has lost almost all of their financial means. I hope everyone sort of can check out some of my videos and some of the other videos you mentioned. And try to get the word out.
We'll get that, as you mentioned, Germar Rudolph, type his name in the ANC report and listen to that interview. That is something else, that whole story.
Yeah, he was on your show. People should listen to that show for sure. Check out his website for sure. But I recommend everyone can go to my website. It's holocausthoaxmuseum.com. And watch the new video, The Majdanek Gas Chamber Myth. Check out the last video. It's the Treblinka archaeology hoax, and also The Last Days of the Big Lie. It's about that.
And comment on it. You know, if you think he's wrong, let him know. But, you know, don't be dogmatic about it. And we're not being dogmatic about this either. If you have some new information, let it be. Yeah. I don't care. You know, just trying to get the truth here. But, I mean, throwing people in jail for this stuff is crazy. And we're out of time, Eric. I'm sorry. I mean, we can talk about this stuff forever, but definitely want people to go over to your website and kick in a donation. You know, there's thousands of you that watch these videos. If you just put in a couple dollars, that's a lot of money to guys like us. Like, that'd be a lot.
Yeah.
I appreciate donations too, but today I'm asking you to go over and give it to Eric Hunt because, you know, he's putting these out for free, really, and he's taking these trips to Poland and everything. It's expensive, and you know, it's worth it. You got to support people because anybody talking about this has been financially ruined. I mean, and that's why more people don't speak out. And I would say if you're going to speak out on this, you might want to do so anonymously. I mean, it might not be worth it for you. I'm just telling you.
It's not. I'm telling you.
It's not worth it. I'll just tell you that it ain't worth it. But do it anonymously.
If you can anonymously share these videos for sure. We want thousands of tens.
Even
of
if you're just like, look what this guy said, you know, and
yeah, look what this asshole says. Yeah,
that's fine.
Because the video speaks for itself. You know, recently the ADL put a hit piece out on it, but they have nothing to say to the contrary. They just quote what I say in the video. And I think when people watch the video, they'll be impressed.
Well, it's well done. I mean, the arguments are solid, and I'd be interested to see a rebuttal, but I don't think there will be other than name calling. So, you know, we'll see what the people think. And the whole documentary is up already in the documentary section on the ANC website, so you can see it there. But you can also go to Eric's site and give him a donation. And Eric, I want to thank you for your time again, but we reach an hour and a half now, so
I heard David Cole was going to debate me. I hope that happens.
Yeah, maybe. You know, dealing with his mom and everything else, but that'd be very interesting.
I've heard he's backed away from it, and he can debate myself, he can debate Friedrich Paul Berg, but he used to appear with Bradley Smith of Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust. So either David Cole is for open debate on the Holocaust or he's not. He doesn't have to debate me. We can get another revisionist to debate with him. He's saying a lot of incendiary things about revisionists who have suffered greatly due to their stance. He's spreading a bunch of lies, we believe. And we're willing to debate him. And he needs to stand by his claim that he's for open debate, or his phony positions just need to be exposed for what they are, as indefensible. By refusing to debate, he is proving that his positions are indefensible. So David, he can debate me, he can debate Friedrich Paul Berg, we can get someone, another revisionist on to debate with him. But I think
if he's actually intellectually
honest, he can appear on a debate.
I'd like to see that, hear that, listen to it, whatever.
And I think all of your viewers would. He could sell some books. So
yeah, well, I'll ask him. I'd like it to be civil. I mean,
for sure.
Yeah, that's all I'm asking, just to stick to the topic at hand and not each other, and that'd be fine with me.
Absolutely. I agree.
Okay then. All right, well, I'll ask him. That's all I can
do.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks for your time, and we'll see if we can get that going. Talk to you later.
Thanks, man.